Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Greenland, the madness continues. Trump announces the start of phase two of the Gaza peace deal, and a U.S. attack on Iran is avoided, at least for now. First, the Greenland madness. Many spurious reasons have been given for why the U.S. must have Greenland, such as Russian and Chinese ships surrounding the island and Denmark's failure to govern or protect Greenland properly. Greenland's security is already well protected under NATO. The U.S. has one base there, and by treaty may add others, and NATO member troops have been engaged in military exercises in Greenland. The two latest absurdities come from Stephen Miller, White House Deputy Chief of Staff, and from Trump. First, here's Miller, quote, "With respect to Denmark, Denmark is a tiny country with a tiny economy and a tiny military. They cannot defend Greenland. They cannot control the territory of Greenland. Under every understanding of law that has existed about territorial control for 500 years, to control a territory, you have to be able to defend a territory, improve territory, inhabit a territory. Denmark has failed on every single one of these tests," unquote. Of course, there is no such law. As for Trump, he wrote a Dear Jonas message to Norway's Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre as follows, quote, "Considering your country decided not to give me the Nobel Peace Prize for having stopped 8 wars plus, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace, although it will always be predominant, but can now think about what is good and proper for the United States of America. Denmark cannot protect that land from Russia or China, and why do they have a right of ownership anyway? There are no written documents. It's only that a boat landed there hundreds of years ago, but we had boats landing there also. I have done more for NATO than any other person since its founding, and now NATO should do something for the United States. The world is not secure unless we have complete and total control of Greenland. Thank you, President DJT." Unquote. At the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland the other day, Trump ruled out force, but insisted the U.S. must have Greenland. This constant demand has many commentators talking about invoking the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Trump announces the start of phase two of the Gaza peace deal. He announced the official start of the 20-point peace plan, which the UN Security Council authorized to include a board of peace to administer Gaza. But Trump has made the board into something unintended, a bait-and-switch operation, one critic writes. So far, five of Trump's favorite dictators, Hungary's Orban, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, Argentina's Javier Milei, Erdogan of Turkey, Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, have all agreed to join the board. And would you believe, Trump is reported to have invited Russia and Belarus to join. France has refused to join, causing Trump to threaten it with a 200% tariff on French wines and champagne. No Palestinians have been invited, but Israel has accepted, despite having objected to the board's membership, saying it had not been consulted, and some of the appointments were, quote, contrary to its policies. Some observers believe Trump intends the board to be an alternative to the United Nations Security Council, acting on matters well beyond Gaza. That's one reason France refused to join the board. But its refusal also shows how Trump's unacceptable behavior on Greenland and other topics leads to European uncooperativeness on matters important to Trump. Corruption is another problem with the Board of Peace. It's pay to play. Member countries will serve 3-year terms, but those wishing to become permanent members will pay $1 billion in cash. No one knows where the money would go, except Trump. And as chair of the board, Trump must approve all board actions, regardless of how it votes. Palestinian technocrats will supervise Gaza's public services, and an international stabilization force will oversee the ceasefire under Trump's plan. Nothing has been said about Israel's daily bombing of Gaza. And what about disarming Hamas? Trump's answer, quote, "With the support of Egypt, Turkey, and Qatar, we will secure a comprehensive demilitarization agreement with Hamas, including the surrender of all weapons and the dismantling of every tunnel." Haaretz, The liberal Israeli newspaper reports that the Israeli military has serious doubts that Trump's plan will disarm Hamas, an early sign that the stabilization force will have a difficult time bringing about the disarmament of Hamas is that Bangladesh, asked to join the force, posed conditions that included the temporary nature of the force, a clear United Nations mandate, a permanent ceasefire, and a complete withdrawal of the Israeli Defense Forces. Those last two conditions seem only remotely attainable. A U.S. attack on Iran is avoided, at least for now. Trump had said that the execution of protesters in Iran might be cause for direct U.S. intervention. But last week he said he was, quote, told that the killing in Iran is stopping, has stopped, and there's no plans for executions. He would not say who told him. U.S. allies in the Persian Gulf reportedly opposed U.S. military action against Iran. It turns out that Israel and Iran had an agreement facilitated by Russia not to be first to attack the other. That would help explain Israel's reported opposition to a Trump decision to attack Iran. But if Trump should decide to attack, would Israel's agreement with Iran still apply? That's a question for the future. The Wall Street Journal reported that another factor in Trump's decision not to attack Iran had to do with U.S. military capabilities. Major U.S. attack forces have been diverted to the Caribbean, and Trump's advisors said a U.S. attack would not bring about regime change in Iran or stop the Iranian regime from oppressing the demonstrators. Steve Witkoff, Trump's special envoy to the Middle East, said a diplomatic approach to Iran is preferable to a military one. He indicated four issues that would be taken up with Iran. One, nuclear enrichment. Two, missiles. They have to cut back on their inventory. Three, the actual nuclear material that they have, which is roughly 2,000 kilograms enriched anywhere between 3.67% and 60%. And four, proxies, referring to Hezbollah and other militant groups. But nothing has so far been said about if and when such talks would take place. In other news, Uganda's leader turns out to be just another aging dictator. Uganda's president, Yoweri Museveni, was 41 when he won election. In his inaugural address, he wrote, quote, "The problem of Africa in general, and Uganda in particular, is not the people, but leaders who want to overstay their power." Now 81, Museveni remains in office, his promises of democracy long since forgotten. He just won another election with 70% of the vote, thanks in part to an internet blackout and intimidation of the opposition. He joins two other aging rulers in Africa who also can't seem to let go of power. Cameroon's President Paul Biya, who won another election last October for a new seven-year term at age 92, and Ivory Coast's President Alassane Ouattara, who won a fourth term at age 83 after disqualifying his main opponents from running. It's a sad spectacle in a region of Africa where, the Washington Post tells us, 70% of sub-Saharan Africans are under the age of 30. Next, it's confirmed. Customers pay the bills for Trump's tariffs. This report from Bloomberg, quote, "Foreign exporters did not meaningfully reduce their prices in response to U.S. tariff increases." This in a report released January 19 by the German Kiel Institute for the World Economy. That report said, quote, "The $200 billion surge in customs revenue represents $200 billion extracted from American businesses and households." The study found that only about 4% of the tariff burden is shouldered by foreign firms, with a near complete pass-through of 96% to U.S. buyers that pay the levies and then must either absorb them or raise selling prices. Manufacturers and retailers are next in line in deciding whether they'll pass along their higher costs or deal with tighter margins. The researchers for this organization wrote, quote, "The tariff functions not as a tax on foreign producers, but as a consumption tax on Americans." Soybean farmers get no help from Trump. Trump's trade policies have alienated one of his most reliable constituents, the American farmer, specifically the soybean farmer. The Chinese market, the soybean farmer's most important one, is not responding in the way that Trump claims. Chinese leaders have reduced their country's reliance on American soybeans. China in 2024 accounted for half about $12.6 billion of all U.S. soybean imports. In September, the country did not import American soybeans at all. For soybean farmers, says the president of the American Soybean Association, market losses due to the ongoing trade conflict with China are only exacerbating financial problems. He pointed to estimates that soybean producers would lose $109 per acre on their crops this year. It is likely that a quarter of U.S. soy production will need to find new customers, he said. Next, the Department of Homeland Security does an outrageous U-turn on Burma or Myanmar. The DHS has ended temporary protected status for several national groups, including the Somalis and Haitians. Now it is doing the same for about 4,000 Burmese nationals, mostly persecuted Christians and democracy advocates, and for the most preposterous of reasons. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem claimed that, quote, Burma has made notable progress in governance and stability, including the end of its state of emergency, plans for free and fair elections, successful ceasefire agreements, and improved local governance, contributing to enhanced public service delivery and national reconciliation, unquote. Daniel Swift, a senior research analyst at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, wrote in the Washington Post with a corrective, quote, that description of Noem's bears no relationship to reality. Since seizing power in 2021, Burma's military junta has waged a brutal civil war marked by indiscriminate airstrikes, mass displacement, and systemic repression. Far from stabilizing, the country is fragmenting. Fighting continues, and next month's election is a sham. The ceasefire agreements, DHS cites, are largely the result of Chinese pressure to stabilize small areas adjacent to its border, not national reconciliation. Forced conscription has expanded, and the country's economy is collapsing. Most opposition parties are banned, and thousands of political prisoners remain in detention under inhuman conditions. In short, Kristi Noem needs to open her eyes. Venezuela's oil revenue will not benefit Venezuelans. The first U.S. sale of Venezuelan oil, valued at $500 million, has been completed, the administration says. And there's a lot more oil left to sell. Who will benefit? A White House spokeswoman said the American and Venezuelan people, but that is not credible. Big Oil will be selling Venezuela's oil, and the administration will control the proceeds. To the extent oil revenue trickles down to Venezuelans, it must be used, says Trump, to purchase U.S.-made goods. Clearly, only wealthy Venezuelans will be able to afford imported U.S. products. The Havana Syndrome mystery may finally be solved. In the last days of the Biden administration, it purchased a device that is said to be responsible for painful neurological injuries suffered by around 1,600 U.S. officials who mostly worked abroad, injuries that became known as the Havana Syndrome because Cuba is where the first cases were reported. The device is said to be portable, backpack-sized, and contains components of Russian origin, though U.S. intelligence is still reluctant to say that the harmful radio energy rays emitted by the device were directed by Moscow or some other foreign source. Victims of the syndrome have been critical of the government's failure to come to a conclusion about the source or provide medical support. The current Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, seems to be sitting on the matter, perhaps unwilling to identify Russia as the source. Finally, Trump says there are no limits to his power. In a wide-ranging interview with the New York Times, President Trump was asked about any limits to his power. He said, quote, yeah, there is one thing, my own morality, my own mind. It's the only thing that can stop me. Might international law pose an obstacle, he was asked. I don't need international law, he said. I'm not looking to hurt people. But he would decide what international law means. The interview makes clear what is already apparent, that Trump prefers coercive diplomacy and believes that the U.S. is at the height of its power to enforce its will. Interviewed separately, Stephen Miller said much the same thing. All that matters in international affairs is force, he said. That view doesn't work in a multilateral, interdependent world order. But if Trump is pursuing a spheres of influence foreign policy, with dominance in Latin America the goal, coercion may work against small states which, say, unlike Denmark, lack major power security backers. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.